We sing the golden rule. Don't do what you don't want done.
Hello, my name is Marlene. Welcome to Vegan Nation.
We sing the golden rule. Don't do what you don't want done to you.
The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views of this station nor its management.
We sing the golden rule. Don't do what you don't want done to you.
This episode includes a rebroadcast from 2019. Thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene Narrow, in Worcester, Massachusetts. In this episode, we'll be joined by Dr. David Nybert, a professor of sociology at Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio. Professor David Nybert is a scholar and activist who teaches courses on animals and society, global injustice, the sociology of law, and social stratification. He has worked as a tenant organizer, as a community activist, and in the prevention of mistreatment and violence against devalued groups. He has published articles in such journals as Child Welfare, the Journal of Interpersonal Violence, Response to the Victimization of Women and Children, Critical Sociology, Race, Gender, Class, Society, and Animals, the Journal of Human Rights and the Environment, and the International Journal of Sociology and Social Policy. He has contributed chapters to numerous anthologies and is the author of several books, including Animal Oppression and Human Violence, Domestication, Capitalism, and Global Conflict, Animal Rights, Human Rights, Entanglements of Oppression and Liberation, and also Hitting the Lottery Jackpot, State Governments and the Taxing of Dreams. In his Vegan Nation interview, Dr. Nybert will be discussing details about his books and also his recent activism in his hometown of Yellow Springs, Ohio. Thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation. We're very fortunate to be joined by David Nybert. David Nybert is a sociologist, author, and professor of sociology at Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio. Welcome, David, and thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Oh, it's an honor to be with you, Maureen. Thanks.
I am greatly honored, and thank you for joining us from your home in Yellow Springs, Ohio. I would love to start out the interview with hearing a little bit about you and what brought you into this new way of looking at the world that's very quite different from mainstream culture, and about being an animal rights activist and a vegan.
Yeah, well, thanks, Marlene. It's been kind of a long journey. I was raised in a small city in Ohio, and I was just like everybody else. You know, I was just, you know, raised to be racist and sexist and homophobic and speciesist and classist. And when I graduated from high school, I, just like everybody else, I was, you know, going into the military. That's what everybody else did on my side of town. But then a friend convinced me to apply to go to Ohio State University. So I had really grown and developed in a profound way, and I'm so thankful to that friend that, you know, nudged me toward going to university instead of the military. But what I think is profound is that I had almost completed my doctoral degree, and I had not thought a single thing about the way other animals were treated in our society. And it was only by chance in 1983, I went to visit a friend in Madison, Wisconsin. And that particular day, there was a huge animal rights demonstration on the campus in Madison. And there, at that same day, there were huge demonstrations in San Francisco and New York. And I sat down on a hillside, and when I heard these speakers, when I stood up, you know, a couple hours later, I mean, my whole world had changed. And I guess I was struck by two things, Marlene. I was struck by how could all of this horrific treatment of other animals go on? And here I was, you know, almost had completed my doctoral degree, and I didn't know anything about it. And the second thing I was struck by is how powerful this system of speciesism is, that all of this time and all of this education, and there wasn't a word said about any of it. So that day I said, I'm never going to eat, you know, never going to eat another animal again. And then starting at that point, I began to see not only how the oppression of other animals paralleled human oppression, but how I increasingly came to see how it was deeply entangled with forms of human oppression. And I've never looked back. You know, when I started thinking over these issues, when my world changed in 1983, I began to write some papers, and then I began to start working that material into my classroom, and not without some pushback, you know, from my university. And I got a lot of pushback when I wanted to create a course on animals and society, primarily from biology and the psychology department, you know, the two departments that oppress other animals on campus. But yeah, in the late 90s, then I actually started sitting down to take, as you said, you know, what I'd learned from history, and then the way that these forms of oppression are deeply entangled, you know, begin to become very visible once you open your eyes to it.
We're listening to the snippets of my previous interview with David Nyberg.
When you control state power, you determine what the laws are going to be and what forms of oppression are legal. And when you turn that into law, that's a powerful ideological tool. And then you also have the police and military muscle to enforce that oppression. And then once the economic motivation is there, the oppressors have the power to do it, then the oppressors need to normalize, naturalize this form of oppression so everyone accepts it as natural. And again, they've been so good at it that people become upset when you even challenge it in many instances. And then I basically look through history, looking at the economic drivers of oppression of human and other animals and the entanglements. And I look at the role of the state and how the state has been used since its inception to support oppression. And it's been used as a tool by elites, you know, to maintain their control over society. And then I had a chapter that looked primarily at ideological control and how past and present, you know, people are taught that their oppressive realities are normal, and people are oppressed. They try to teach them to accept the fact, the purported fact, that they're deserving of this fate. And of course, all people have been taught throughout history that other animals, you know, are just deserving of whatever happens to them. Of course, not all people accept that, and people have challenged that for thousands of years, but the elites just need to have control enough people or have the military force necessary to continue to enforce their form of oppression. So that's what I talked about in 2002.
Will you please share with our listeners the recent experience involving your attempt to rescue the lambs?
Yeah, so this was an unexpected turn of events. So when classes ended at Wittenberg in May, then I have a sabbatical in the fall. So it means that I had a considerable amount of time until next January to sit down and write. And I was hoping to get a good start on another book. But shortly after my sabbatical began, I live in Yellow Springs, Ohio, and I live right next to the campus of Antioch College. I had an opportunity to move to Yellow Springs in the early 90s when I began teaching at Wittenberg, and I lived here pretty quietly. A lot of people didn't know I was here. But going back to May, when I took that walk from my sabbatical began, started to walk through Antioch campus, and I realized that I knew that they had put up a field of solar panels, but I saw six baby lambs in this field of solar panels. And they look, you know, kind of shell-shocked. Who knows what had happened to them before they arrived at that point, how they were thrown together, taken from their mothers, castrated, you know, without any pain medication, then transported and thrown together in this field. And I wondered, you know, why were they there? So I went back and I did a little research, and I found out that this was, I think, maybe the third year that Antioch College was bringing in lambs, putting them in that field of solar panels to keep the grass under control. And then at the end of the summer, then they send the lambs to a slaughterhouse and they feed them to students. And that's horrific. Then to compound that, students are recruited to learn this way of what they refer to as sustainable ecological farming and animal agriculture. So I was horrified by all this. And I went back and I visited the lambs again. And I thought, I've written about the very oppressive treatment of other animals now for years. And, you know, and I've rescued, you know, like so many of us, you know, dogs and cats, and, you know, try to help other free living animals during the winter. But now here I am face to face with these innocent lambs who have a summer of exploitation, and then they're destined for the slaughterhouse. And I thought, I need, you know, all right, so here's my opportunity to actually step up in my little tiny corner of the world, to try to be an advocate, you know, for these individuals. So, and I didn't realize when I started that advocacy what it would turn into. I put up a couple flyers around the Antioch College, and I put a small ad in local papers saying anybody that wants to help save the lambs, you know, contact me, we'll form a committee. And no one responded, no one from the college, no one from the village of Yellow Springs. And actually, I realized that the flyers I put up on the college campus had been torn down. So then I wrote some letters to the newspaper, and they were ignored. So then I wrote letters, emails to the college president, and he ignored them for a while. And then he basically told me, thanks for my interest in their program, but he doesn't want me to contact him any further to discuss sheep. So that door was closed. I got a meeting with the chairperson of the Board of Trustees at Antioch, who was basically told they don't interfere with the president's management of the college. So then I just had to go back to my past as an organizer and community activist and start trying to organize some support to save the lambs. So one of the things I did was I reached out to well over 100 professors around the world, and they signed a statement asking Antioch to free the lambs and to begin to focus on, you know, transform their farm to a plant-based farm, because that's, you know, it's what the world desperately needs at this point in time. And that didn't have an impact on the college, all of those professors. So then I went to the local Facebook page and I reached out asking people if they would support the effort to help the lambs. And then that's when I really began to get, I was really vilified. How dare I challenge Antioch College and this, there's sustainable system of food production. Why don't I go after factory farms? So I explained, I spent, you know, the last two decades going after factory farms, but this is not the way. And this is oppressive to the, you know, to the lambs and all the other animals. So in the ensuing months, I've just been demonized in the village on Facebook and in the newspaper. And even some colleagues at Wittenberg, where I work, you know, have basically are telling me this is none of my business. And why am I interfering with the workings of this college? And I try to emphasize, you know, this has import for, you know, for some of the most serious problems facing the world. And also these nine individuals, you know, they deserve life. And there are several regional sanctuaries willing to take them. And even a farm sanctuary based in Watkins Glen, New York, even agreed to either take the lambs or assist in their placement. We offered to buy the lambs. One organization has offered to give the university or the college, Antioch College, a large supply of vegan food if they'll release the lambs. But the university is very, they're very resistant. So I'm continuing that advocacy. I'm hoping still that the college will agree to release those lambs and not send them to slaughterhouse. But, you know, but the struggle goes on.
We're listening to Dr. David Nybert. Dr. Nybert is joining us via Skype in Yellow Springs, Ohio. You're tuned into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views of this station nor its management. Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle.
We love them.
We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Nybert.
We are one, paws, hands, and hearts, hooves, feathers, wings. Nothing is lost if only we unite, our song begins. For the reasons are pure if our kindness is sown in the wind. This moment shall grow, and onwards we go, and we begin. Rise up and heal them. Rise up and care for them. Rise up to the love in our hearts.
All great truths, right? First there's ridicule, and then yep. After that there's resistance. Mm-hmm. And then if it doesn't go away, there's massive resistance. And then if it still doesn't go away, there's acceptance. And yes. that's the normal process through any kind of change. We have no idea the impact that we have on somebody else's life. Somebody can listen to this podcast or this interview, and you have no idea that they remember a key point and they tell their child or son, and that impacts them for the rest of their life.
Right. That was the voice of Dr. Anthony Wongtuan and Veronica Ramos, co-founders of Westboro Spine and Holistic Health Center.
I just want to share my thoughts with y'all, especially coming from a black man's perspective. Let's go. Just cause I'm black don't mean I eat chicken. Barbecue up on my vegetables dripping. Brussels sprouts, mushrooms, finger licking. All y'all trolls don't know what y'all missing. I'm a freaking black vegan. Hell no, I'm not a felon. Instead of eating goat, I'd rather eat some watermelon. Full of energy up on my feet like I'm gelling. Show me a slaughterhouse full of plants and pain yelling. And apple a day will keep the doctor away. Eating like gorillas, peanut salad. Hey, I wish to wake in a vegan world someday. No cheese, no honey, let animals out the cage. Eating lamb, what the hell was I thinking? Thank God for my sight, I ain't winking. Another cow gets killed while y'all blinking. Eating pork throughout the years is why they shrinking. No fish, leave them in the sea to dance. Everything we need is given by the plans. Ever catch me eating steak? Not a chance. Get bananas, cashew milk, and fins. That girl is a real plant eater. She never compares herself to a cheetah. No acne, I'm eating cleaner. What she cooking up tonight, man, I need her.
All great truths, right?
Mm.
First there's ridicule, and then after that there's resistance, and then if it doesn't go away, there's massive resistance, and then if it still doesn't go away, there's acceptance.
Black vegans, all vegans, say cancer awareness, eat to live, go vegan.
TK the Artist with the song Black Vegan. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlena Massachusetts. We're joined by Dr. David Nybert via Skype in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Dr. Nybert is the author of Animal Rights, Human Rights, Entanglements of Oppression and Liberation, and also Animal Oppression and Human Violence. So it's universal, this resistance to the vegan message.
Yes, it is. And yeah, I've also had my post deleted on the local Facebook page, the administrator going so far as to say, you know, I don't have anything to say that's worth hearing. So, and the local newspaper, you know, even though people here in Yellow Springs had no interest in saving these lambs from the slaughterhouse, save one or two enlightened individuals, you know, people from around the country and the world, you know, obviously very interested, and letters started coming into the local newspaper, so many that by the end of July, they basically made an announcement they're publishing no more letters about the lambs unless written by someone in the village, so that they basically silenced, you know, the national and international community weighing in on why these lambs, you know, deserve a right to life.
So next, I would love to talk about your book, Animal Oppression and Human Violence, Domestication, Capitalism, and Global Conflict, that you wrote in 2013, and I have to say that I fully enjoyed your book. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. So by the time 10,000 years ago, when domestication started, we already had this toxic form of masculinity in these powerful men who were successful and good at wielding weapons and intimidating others, that they begin to take control of these domesticated other animals, horses and cows and pigs and sheep, because they were the primary source of wealth at the time. And then, of course, they were a symbol of power. And when these other animals became property, then we began to see the devaluation of women that started when men first started hunting. We began to see the status of women decline. When other animals become property and societies become more stratified and people become devalued and many of them are relegated to positions of serf and and peasant and forced to work in fields. Then we see women, you know, also relegated to the status of property and primarily, you know, controlled by men.
I liked something I heard you mention during your fabulous interview with Roger Yates in Dublin, Ireland, the interview back in 2017. Mm-hmm. And with his work, his great important work with Vegan Information Project out of Dublin, and that you talked about the Garden of Eden. And I have to say that I related this because I remember a bumper sticker called Eve Was Framed.
Yeah.
And whenever I heard you talk about this, instead of the fall of humanity being caused by a woman eating an apple, it was from a man killing and eating an animal.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't recovered. We won't recover until all of that is behind us.
Thanks to you, we are creating a vegan world, a world of egalitarianism, harmony, peacefulness, sustainability, and nonviolence. Thank you, David Nybert.
Well, thank you, Marlene. And your program is so important. People pick up a book now and then, but your program reaches so many people. So I really respect and admire and appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you very much. And we're coming to a close in the interview for today. Do you have any additional messages for our listeners?
Oh, if anyone has a chance to reach out to Antioch College, ask them if they would please, please release the lambs to sanctuary. That would be just lovely.
We're listening to a rebroadcast from 2019. Unfortunately, the lambs were not able to be saved. My interview with David was September 6th, 2019. And today's broadcast, September 12th, 2023, included the vegan song by Daniel Redwood, Rise Up.
And I think that of all of these wonderful people in the world, growing numbers who are developing an animal consciousness, I think one of the most powerful messages of the wonderful Roger Yates that you just mentioned in Ireland is promoting the idea that veganism is not just a diet, and veganism is not just for animals. Veganism is a vision of the future that is nonviolent, not oppressive, and that's actually a very necessary precondition to get justice for other animals.
Thank you. You're listening to David Nybert, a sociologist, author, and professor of sociology at Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio. And David is joining us from his home in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Thanks again, David, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Oh, thank you for hosting me. I appreciate it.
This has been a great honor. I really value your work, and you are very powerful and greatly appreciated.
Thank you so much.
Okay, David, is there anything else that you'd like to add into the interview?
No, I think we've covered a lot. They're probably tired of listening to me.
You are fabulous. Oh, great, great.
Thank you, Marlene. I really appreciate your work.
Oh, thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.
Direct Action Everywhere at their Open Rescue in Oakland, California. Thanks again for tuning in to Vegan Nation. The Vegan Nation. used in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its manager. Join us next week at this time, where we'll bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle, a healthy vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at vegansradio.com. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Molly Narrow, wishing you a good day. Additional vegan music in today's episode is by Ellie Sarti of Compassion Arts, Creatures Great and Small.
Creatures great and small, we love them. Lullabies and Bible songs say they are weak, we are strong. As we sing the golden rule, don't do what you don't want done to you. Dress the kids in pajamas with the little lambs painted blue and white. Tuck them in with the nursery rhyme of cows that jump the moon at night. Monkey sees, monkey do, the lambs that follow us to school. Dumb as dogs and big baboons, but the chickens. Under the heavens, we pray for mercy in our lives. But under our hand can we show no mercy for those lives we sacrifice.
Everything Comes Around by Ellie Sarti. Much thanks to Ellie and to all the musicians.
Everything comes around.
Much thanks for tuning in to Vegan Nation. See you next week.
Everything.